Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
And this would be the Media Project, an opportunity for you to get a little bit of commentary and analysis of the media issues of the week, and perhaps even some insight if we're really good and better than our usual game. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Here's Rosemary Armeo, professor at the University of Albany.
Hello. Probably we'll just insult each other.
We'll do, yeah.
But and I may point out the head of the journalism program.
That's true.
Is indeed a longtime investigative journalist. And you know, people tune in just to hear that, I think. That's just to hear how we deal with each other, don't you think?
Yeah. You and Rosemary are really the contentious type.
Yeah.
Lauding Rex's looks and you know, all of that. That's
Dr. Alan Chartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio. I'm sitting here. Hey, I'm sitting here, he says. Am I not present? We have mail, and you too can participate if you want comment on this. And this mail comes from John.
Who is mail?
He is male, yes, so we don't have his hometown. John says, I totally disagree with the argument that we need to cover Trump to show his idiocy. He craves publicity of any kind. So he says, number one, stop covering Trump. He's dangerous and should be shuffled off into the corner through a media blackout. Don't attend his press conferences. Just cut him out. Two, cover Clinton and Jill Stein. Well,
Clinton and Jill Stein and not Trump?
And not Gary Johnson.
And not Gary Johnson?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Sounds like censorship to me. No, it won't work.
Yeah. No, it's a lousy, stinking idea.
I understand the impetus for it because there really is a ton of coverage. And do we go overboard? I don't know. There is a lot. On the other hand, I don't see how you avoid it. He calls for the assassination of his opponent. That's worthy of coverage, in my view.
It really frosts me.
What's that? What does?
The whole idea that we're getting all this mail saying you're giving too much to Trump. This is a presidential election. It could well be that after this election is over, the United States will become a fascist. So what in the world would you not cover a guy? You know, they said that with Hitler. He's a clown. Leave him alone. Don't say anything about him. Let me say, you saw the results there. No, you got to cover the guy. And I really wish you'd stop sending those kinds of letters to me because they annoy me.
That said, and annoying Alan aside, the press has really never gotten it right how to cover the less than Republican and Democratic candidates. How do you cover alternative candidates? And it is true that lack of coverage is one of the reasons they can never rise higher than they have in the past.
Plus the election laws, which make it almost impossible to get on the ballot in some places.
The notion, and I do not at all support the notion that we ought to give equal coverage to these candidates.
No, I don't either. Yeah. We don't give equal coverage to anything else.
That's right.
Our job to say, we think this is most important, and so therefore, here's what we're doing. You may object to that, and in fact, we change our minds about it, but no.
You have to give appropriate coverage, but this notion of cover only Hillary and Jill Stein is, of course, preposterous. I think most of our listeners would recognize that.
By the way, from the Department of Self-Serving, I invited Jill Stein to come in here, and she sat where you're sitting right now, Rosemary, and we had a delightful hour on the air.
Well, aren't you just great?
Yeah, I am, and I told her. I said to her, you're not going to win.
You're not going to win. Here's what I said.
Yes, I am, she said.
It is really interesting when the media tries to do this, you know, cover one the same as the other. Earlier this week, CNN brought on the Democratic opponent, who is facing Paul Ryan in Wisconsin. He has zero chance of winning. Snowballs will be melting you know where before this guy gets in. And he puts him on national television, Wolf Blitzer does, to talk to him about Paul Ryan. And it didn't do him any service at all. He's just simply not in that league.
Right.
At all. So why was he there?
Which, by the way, is what happens when Gary Johnson gets attention, because not a good communicator.
He makes Bill Weld look
boring.
Good.
Yes, he doesn't do too well.
But on the other hand, we asked Johnson to come in and do the same thing as we had with Jill Stein, and we never even got a call back.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Maybe he doesn't want to win.
Well, as I have said repeatedly, these guys are, it's not the same as the 2000 election, when the alternative candidate was just simply at a whole different level. Or even Ross Perot, for that matter, who was an extremely effective and amusing communicator.
Now, there is a serious issue here, though, raised by a New York Times reporter, Jim Rutenberg, who points out that there is a difficulty for journalists who are covering Donald Trump. And that is this. If you're a working journalist and you believe in your heart that Donald Trump is, I'll just read this paragraph. If you believe that Donald J. Trump is a demagogue playing to the nation's worst racist and nationalist tendencies, that he cozies up to anti-American dictators, and that he would be dangerous with control of the United States nuclear codes, how the heck are you supposed to cover him? Now, that's a really valid question. He goes on in his column to explore this, because American journalism for the last half century, let's say, has been dedicated to this notion of being fair to all, of giving appropriate attention and setting aside your personal biases. The difficulty is that I would say that the vast majority of journalists, 90% of journalists who are covering the Trump campaign, view him as a clear and present danger to
and
the
say so.
Well, they don't all say so. That's the difficulty.
Well, that's happening. This is unique in this election. You're seeing not just the New York Daily News, although they also have done this.
Every
you're seeing
morning.
The Washington Post come out with amazing editorials saying...
Editorials? But what about the reporters who are supposed to be covering the every day in and day out? How do you do that if you're a reporter? Right.
Well, you just tell the truth. You say what he said, and they put it in headlines, and they make that, you know, the point of the article. And, of course, you are giving an opinion just by placing it into context.
Mm-hmm. It's very hard.
I've never been a big fan of objectivity, I have to say. It's true. I think opinion writing is far more interesting and impassioned. I do believe in complete transparency. You have to tell readers, here's where I'm coming from when I write this. That said, it is interesting to watch media kind of struggle to deal with this on the cable stations. They have tried to bring on proponents of each of the candidates.
It's disgusting.
It is. It's like watching two pandering. Oh, it's just terrible.
I turn it off. It's just stupid.
Well, but Joe Scarborough, actually, whom I know you don't like, Alan, raises the question.
Like.
He says, how balanced do you have to be when one side is just irrational? Now, he's a Republican, and he's saying this.
And
how
didn't
balanced
used
you have
to
be?
Say bad things That's about right. Trump. Quite the opposite.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
he's changed.
He was pretty much cozy with him for a while.
Well, you know, yeah. You guys are so unsophisticated. You have to look beyond the story. I mean, here's the real story. The real story is that the Republican establishment hates Trump. Now
I'm too unsophisticated to understand that.
I've read that. Didn't get it all.
Now you're Rupert Murdoch. The New York Daily News, which is owned by Zuckerman, they figure every day there's going to be an anti-Trump headline about clowns and this and that they give, the Daily News.
Why is that? Why is the New York Daily News being so, I mean, colorfully anti-Trump on their front page?
Circulation, my dear boy. That's what it's all about. In New York City, for example, the Daily News has been very bright. They have gone after a particular demographic of potential voters and potential readers who will read their product. They're in a death struggle, of course. We all know that with the Post. Now, the Post is more interesting because we know what the Daily News is doing, but the Post is owned by Murdoch, and Murdoch's constituency is divided. There are the voters who voted for Trump, and there are the institutional establishment Republicans who hate Trump. They don't show up at the conventions.
Right.
And so, which of his colleagues is Murdoch going to play to? And if you read the Post, you get the idea that they don't know what the heck they're doing this.
Yeah, well, maybe they're being more fair than you usually expect
them to
be. The Post is mostly, and again, I have to point out that the New York City tabloids are really outliers in American journalism. They are blatantly partisan one way or another,
right.
Especially the Post. And I think the Post is generally pretty pro-Trump. In fact, quite pro-Trump.
I think they're more anti-Hillary than pro-Trump.
Well, you could say that.
And I don't think they know what to do. And I can tell you this much. You can call them anything you want, outliers. But how many people would you off in order to get 7 million readers.
Well, yeah, it would be a nice thing to have that many.
For journalists who have not tabloid tendencies, who really do want to do a good job and cover this election in a way that is helpful to readers and viewers, this election is a problem. And I'm rating people every day as I watch them. Dana Bash interests me on CNN. I think she's a legit journalist. And yet some of her reporting, I just go, oh, my gosh, she's bending over backwards to make Trump look good. And is it because CNN has hired Corey Lewandowski and so they have a franchise in this? Is she trying to keep sources? Why would she be saying these things? Because it's not really supported by what I consider the usual evidence. And that's what I've come to, is that they really are indeed trying to bend over backwards to make sure their point of view doesn't completely color their reporting.
You know, one of the interesting things, too, is by directly quoting candidates, of course, as Alan points out, you're reflecting almost a bias because you're allowing the color to come in. One of the things that's going on is that news organizations are greenlighting profanity more than they used to. And this is interesting because Trump routinely uses, but is not quoted very much, using four-letter words.
So that's interesting because, and it's one of the things that ticks me off more than anything else, because they own their own newspapers and because they're private enterprise, they can do whatever they want. They can greenlight profanity. We on radio cannot, because if we do, we're going to get fined and basically put out of business by the government.
So you can't quote Donald Trump saying he's going to bomb the blank out of Islamic State's oil operation.
You could not. You could say blank. Now, there is something to be said for saying blank, because then everybody projects into blank any dirty word that they might have.
I think that the traditional media, TV, newspapers for sure, magazines, have been behind the eight ball on profanity at least since the 1990s. Our view was that we had to protect, you know, the family and the readers with moral values. How's that done for our circulation? Not great. Let's start writing and quoting people the way they actually talk and what people hear.
I think we've been too inhibited. I agree.
Totally. It has not worked. And I liked it this past weekend. Fareed Zakaria had both a column and he talked about it on his television program, BS, and he used the actual full-out term.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and that was his argument. And he quoted, you know, Frankfurter from the Supreme Court on what the theory of BS is, and his argument was that that's really what Donald Trump was, a BSer.
Or as we say, a BS artist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, if you have some points of view about this, write to us. media@wamc.org is our email address, media@wamc.org. I promise that we are unlikely to denigrate your letter as quickly as we did the one that we read first off tonight. Sorry about
that. We said we understood the impulse. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you know, I'm sorry, Rosemary, and I know you teach your students very well at the university, and I know they've promoted you to the head of the program and everything else. But, you know, as I've said before, I was just thinking about this morning, when the Soviet Union was and Pravda was, you hardly ever saw a pro-American headline in Pravda, right?
Right.
Okay. And when the Soviet Union was and America was what it was when it was, then you hardly ever saw a pro-Russian headline, still don't, in the major centrist journalism in America. So I hope that nobody really thinks that newspapers don't have limitations on what they can say in terms of the masters they are serving in a society.
This is a powerful pull of stereotypes, and it isn't Russia's a good one, so is Africa.
PPS, powerful pull of stereotypes.
Yeah. If you write a story from Africa about the wondrous way some market works, for example, and what great things are selling and how it's a unique model, you'll have a hard time selling that. Write something good about Bosnia, for example, in Yugoslavia, and you will not find a market for it because what editors expect and so they're looking for are articles about conflict and famine and distress. So, yeah, we have stereotypes, and they have them the other way around, too.
Yeah, but what does it say about, I know both
of
you.
That we're human?
Well, yeah, exactly.
You know, both of you are such stand-up defenders of anything newspaper. So that
I think they're dying. I'm not sure that that defends them.
Well, yeah. No, but you
and
are.
And I think that they do the work that every other journalist builds upon and pretends is their own, and we should appreciate the
That sounds
effort.
Like a John Oliver routine.
It was also a slam at Alan.
Seen mean that great.
Well, yeah, yeah, slamming yeah. out because oh, we love the TU here in town, and we frequently purloin their articles.
That's a wonderful thing.
But we always
thing.
Identify it.
That's very kind of you. Except when it becomes just accepted wisdom, you know. For example, well, anyway, never mind. There was this great.
Oh,
video.
I hate that. You never mind stuff. Let me tell you a few things about you, Alan. Oh, never mind.
Folks, here is John, the bashing I told you about earlier. Welcome to the Media Project.
John Oliver, the host Wonderful. Of Last Week Tonight, did this terrific segment, which if you haven't seen it, just Google it and you'll see this great video pointing out the economic realities of local journalism and the perils confronting the newspaper industry. And it was really worth seeing. And it was actually something of a love letter to newspapers because he made the point that local journalism and other media wouldn't have a lot to report if they didn't read the newspaper, which point Alan has made all the time on this program. We appreciate that. But unfortunately, the guy who is the chief lobbyist for newspapers, the CEO of the Newspaper Association of America, put out a release that was really nasty, saying, well, he's making fun of newspapers. How terrible. Ignoring the fact that it was actually a good and very funny, but a piece that also pointed to the tragedy of the decline of the industry.
That guy had no sense of humor, it would appear, from what he wrote. However, he called the Poynter Institute a journalism think tank and tried to dial it back a bit, saying, no, he had just been misinterpreted. He just wanted to make sure that companies like Tronc, which got thoroughly roasted in the Oliver piece.
Tronc, yes, that
they were rewarded for at least trying something new, for not accepting the death of newspapers.
It used to be Tribune. You know, this is the old company known as the Tribune Newspapers, now
right.
called Tronc. You need a cool name here, Alan, for WAMC. You know,
Not good.
Well, I liked it better than Tronc.
That was a moment of brilliance. Whamk. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, we slipped right over. We were talking about Fox News. We should go right back for a second
here
to the Roger Ailes controversy.
Wow.
To
oh,
the,
boy. I love this company.
How would you like to have worked there? Oh, wow. Right. It wouldn't have mattered to you guys.
Oh, yeah. We would have done fine, right?
We do not do this in our own institution, so why in the world would you say it would be okay with us?
Well, that's why.
Because we have wives and sisters and daughters.
Well, so do the many men at Fox who appear to have enabled and to have helped Roger Ailes
no
in his hideous harassment. Women were told, don't make waves about that, you know, don't fight it. That's what's coming up. That's the second wave. Maybe I should let you set it
no,
up.
No, it's fine. I mean, no, I think that it's fine. Gretchen Carlson's lawsuit that we talked about before accusing Roger Ailes of sexual harassment. And now this investigation, the internal investigation underway by a law firm hired by Rupert Murdoch to take a look
Paul
at this.
Is that Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Garrison, Paul. Wharton?
Whoa, he does it all.
I prepare for these.
Very impressive. They are finding, it seems, lots of enablers. That there has been, for example, multimillion-dollar settlement to keep quiet, seemingly, somebody who endured years and years of this harassment. And the question that's raised is this: how could this not have been known? How could multimillion-dollar payouts not have been known in the executive suite of 21st Century Fox, the Rupert Murdoch organization? And if it was known, why was it not disclosed to investors?
And I have another couple of single words to answer you with. Cosby. How long did that go on? Not only that, but, you know, I think the nuance of the story is being missed, and I'm going to be severely criticized for this.
Okay. Probably by us.
Yeah.
But what is
oh boy,
it?
Oh boy.
You will. Roger Ailes is one ugly man.
Oh, here we go.
So,
if
no,
he were handsome, Alan, it would not make any difference.
No, you're conceptually.
If he looked like Denzel Washington, it would not make any difference.
Conceptually, you are absolutely right. Nevertheless, when you take a look at contemporary American standards and what people see when they see Roger Ailes' picture in the paper, is a guy who adds weight to the fact that if you're an ugly guy, see what I mean? And you use your office for no good, which is what he was doing. I think we all understand easier what was going on there. Then, if example, it would never happen with Rex, but Rex is tall, as you mentioned before. He's handsome. He's over 6 feet.
See, he did get it in. I knew he would.
There we go. There we go. You know, the thing is, this does have implications for the future of the Murdoch media empire, however, just in that fact that what I mentioned earlier, if the executive suite of Fox knew about this and did not disclose it to investors, that is criminal.
Some lawsuits.
Absolutely.
Some,
there are
criminal
investors
charges.
Who could sue them. There are securities laws that may have been violated. The U.S. attorney ought to be looking at that. So this could have wide ramifications that could go on for a long time. However, I do not think there's some speculation, well, this could really have a big impact on Fox News in an election year. I don't think that's likely to happen, notwithstanding whatever else.
Including even the women who are arrested, don't want the basic news function of that channel to change. I'm hoping to put on my feminist hat that this incident, along with Bill Cosby, will finally lead to women not putting up with what the women in Fox did for decades, which was to just eat it, to just accept it, to just say, okay, this is a cost of doing business. I got to put up with this jerk who is my boss.
And in fact,
and they have to yell and scream.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. However, it gets even worse than people who are complaining about sexual harassment and the rest of it. Now people are coming forward saying, you know, I serviced this guy. I actually did this stuff, you know, for years. And then I went out and I helped him get others.
Right. And you predict it. You said, will we see women like that? So I agree with you. I think that that is a change. We're not just getting victims now. We're getting people who... I mean, they would have a hard time fighting that in court, wouldn't they? If you went along with his entreaties, with his requests, could you really prosecute him?
Mm-hmm. Well, you might be able to by saying he made me do it in order to keep the job.
For a year? Ailes defense attorney, and it's Susan Ehrlich, is that how you say her
mm-hmm.
name?
Mm-hmm.
Who is defending, he has a leading...
Susan Estrich.
Estrich, that's it. Yes, thank you. A leading feminist, he has hired a friend of his, a personal friend, to defend him. And that's what she's going to say. For a year, really, you went along with that? He forced you? He forced you to do that for 6 years, 7 years?
You're pretty good legal...
It's hard to do.
It may be hard to do, but if you were sitting on a jury and... Ailes was sitting up there, and you were looking at him in the same way as, you know, that jury couldn't wait. And I have some reservation about this, to convict Shelley Silver, the Speaker of the New York State Assembly, or...
But you think he was convicted because he was ugly, not because he was like a crook for
years?
No,
I did not. And I didn't say that,
okay.
And I severely resent it.
Of course you do.
We're just trying to help you get to the point here.
No, my point is sometimes juries don't like certain kinds of people.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were sitting on the jury, there's no question. I don't think I would get on the jury because I feel so strongly about it. But Roger Ailes is a man of immense charm. Look at what he built. He didn't do that totally by being a coercer. Mm-hmm. He did it by being the great negotiator, by being a very brilliant man, by being a powerful man. And so it doesn't matter that he was physically ugly. That's appealing men and to women.
I agree with some of what you just said. But I don't think it was that he was a charming man that got him that. He understood, as many other politicians have, that there is a vast right-wing group in America, and that if he developed, you know, a news model that would cater to them, they would flock to him, and they did. And I don't think it was particularly charming of him to do it.
Speaking of vast right wing, we have to pay just a little bit of attention to the comeuppance that seems to be aiming in Glenn Beck's way. A federal judge has ruled that Glenn Beck must give up two confidential sources that he claims informed his reports on the Boston Marathon bombing. Now, let's just be clear about what happened here. Beck reported on his talk radio show that a 23-year-old guy named Abdulrahman Al-Harbi was involved in the Boston Marathon terrorist attacks. In fact, although he was initially named as a person of interest, authorities cleared his name, but Beck continued to report that he was involved. This is a guy who was injured in the attacks. He filed a defamation suit. And now Beck is, you know, journalists are typically allowed to withhold the names of their sources. The question is Beck, does he have the journalist privilege? And second, do those sources actually exist?
Okay, I love this story because normally I would be totally defending the journalists and saying, no, we have to defend the source. And I hate that Glenn Beck gets called a journalist. But as a real journalist, we must defend Glenn Beck because the laws are made to protect the most unpopular.
So who is it, the journalist?
Okay, the guy who ran smutty newspapers, who has led to Supreme Court decisions that allow us to print lots of stuff in newspapers, he was a smut peddler. I didn't like him. Glenn Beck is not a real journalist. So that's number one. Number two is that the law has always been that you have a shield except under rare circumstances. One of those circumstances is that the court could prove the case in no other way. There's no one else they could subpoena, no one else they could look at, no records. And I believe there probably weren't these two sources. So how else are you going to get it? They have to make Glenn Beck reveal who his sources were in order to help this very malign 23-year-old man argue his case. Who was it you talked to who said he was involved?
Because there's no other way
you think of any?
I cannot.
Shut my mouth. No. I agree with you.
How about it?
Right. I think the case is clear here that he should have to sing. Good.
Yeah. Well, ordinarily you don't hope for the ill of somebody who's a defendant in a libel suit, but in this case, Glenn Beck. All right. On that point, the Media Project comes to an end. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith, we are grateful that you put up with us for this half hour.
We don't know they did. They probably all turned off.
That's right. Them for the
the audience has been depleted as
and
we go
as
along.
For me, I say the show should be an hour.
Oh, okay. Come back next week, folks.
Working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.